And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome to On to Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. You know, that's the intro here at On to Waveland, but my brain actually engaged with it in that moment. I'm like, man, that is wild. The Topps has been doing baseball cards for 70 years. Love that stuff. So anyway, this is On to Waveland, Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney, here to talk all things Cubs. And I think, as I was observing this weekend series against the Tigers, the Cubs, of course, took two of three, and two wins were, one was kind of more in the blowout vein, but the other was pretty comfortable. And then the loss was that back and forth wild one on Saturday. The Cubs lost it in extra innings. And it occurred to me, it was like, how perfect did that series go in terms of what we think the Cubs are? Like, where if the Cubs are going to be good and they're going to flip a switch, they're going to sweep that series. And if they're going to just kind of be like good enough for us to be like, oh, you know, they're hanging around, they're going to take 2-3 and it's going to look like a comfortable taking 2-3. So that was my sort of overall take from that series. And there was certainly some individual stuff to really appreciate. And I guess I'm going to start by just mentioning Kyle Hendricks yesterday. And that's not a great Tigers lineup that he's facing, but that was just such a vintage Hendricks performance, where actually it was a historic one for him personally. I think that was the most called strikes he's ever had in a start. I believe I saw Jordan Bastian tweet that out, 30 called strikes out of his approximately 100 pitches, which is crazy. But he looked fantastic, locating basically everything exactly where he wanted to. So that was a really nice thing to see, particularly after two previous starts that I thought he looked really good too. That Pirates one was the one with the fluky hits, but I actually thought his pitching looked really good in that one. So that definitely stood out. Ian Happ getting some hits from the right-handed side was very nice to see. Bullpen with some mixed performances in there, but still like the young guys looking really good. Dig that. And then I'll set this up. You can comment anything you want from the series, but I'm going to set up a particular player because there was a particular guy who had a huge game on Saturday. People are loving to love him right now. And you guys wrote a fantastic piece on this guy that you can plug and share things from. But anything else you want to comment from the series, fair game, as we're kind of kicking things off.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Hendricks continuing to look more like Kyle Hendricks, I think, is huge. I think, you know, there's no chance of this team doing anything if Kyle Hendricks isn't, if he doesn't get back to who we know who he is, right? So, I mean, we talk about how bad this starting staff has been to start the season. If he's not right, if he's not getting, I mean, I think the called strikes, what you touched on right there, is exactly who he is, right? When he's on, he's getting called strikes. You probably want to see more swing and miss in general with the changeup, but I mean, that's, you know, once he's commanding the pitch, I think this is a big first step, or, you know, a big step for him in general, getting back on track. Clearly the command is there. In general, it just feels like, yeah, I mean, it's 4-4 in these first 26 that I kind of was hammering. This stretch of 26 games where I think 21 of them are against below 500 teams, 4-4 to start it. I mean, it's just, I think we just keep getting more and more evidence that this is who they are, right? As long as this team before the trade deadline, whatever happens after the trade deadline and after the moves are made, they may be significantly worse. But right now, this is just, you know, they're among the team, like group of what, 20 other teams that are just kind of like, meh. This is baseball right now. A bunch of average teams. They have some things that you can point to that are like, oh, that's interesting. That's kind of fun. And I think tonight is a nice little reminder of the past and the future with Leicester and Al Salah going. I kind of like that. Seeing Leicester is going to get some love from the crowd at Wrigley. But
sir. That's a later part of this podcast episode. Okay.
Sorry. I jumped ahead.
We're talking about what just happened. Gosh. I don't have, and look, and I'm cutting you off too because I don't have the emotional bandwidth to go through thinking about these guys coming back, talking to my heartstrings. Then we go back to talking about something else and then doing it to me again.
It's going
to
make you sad.
I'm reserving my tears for later.
I'm sorry, Brett, but I'm amped to watch Al Salah again. He's the reason I'm most excited for Cubs games right now. Al Salah in the future, it's something worth talking about, in my opinion. But fine. We'll talk about the weekend.
Let's not just glance over this chance to rip the Cubs present. And my takeaway, this is a very brief moment.
And I just gotta say, like, I know you aren't, like embodying a role or anything. Like, you're not the heel of the podcast or anything, but it just cracks me up because it was like, I was not anticipating that at all. We're like going around the group and then it's like, gets to Mooney and he's like, hey, wait a minute. We got to shit on this team for a second.
I was backing you up, Brett. You know, Sahadi's talking about the past and the future. I'm like, I'm Joe Madden living in the present here, man. You know, I'm in my basement living in the moment, And my takeaway, it was a random one, and my Zoom attention span is very terrible, which might explain some of my interjections in this podcast, but the Detroit... I believe it was Detroit's play-by-play guy asked David Ross on Friday's pregame Zoom something about his impressions of the Tigers, and Ross didn't like mean to come across like Nick Saban talking about a directional school, but he said something like, they're a major league team, got to play good to win or something like that. And I'm thinking like, you're the Cubs right now. Like you don't get to like overlook any opponent when you're like 5-4 against the Pirates, I believe, and you've totally... miss this opportunity to kind of change the conversation and pad your record before a week that features the two teams in the last NLCS from a full season, and then just an absolutely brutal June schedule with two West Coast trips against maybe the three best teams in the National League, a trip to New York to face the Mets, and at least one series, I think, in Milwaukee. And the Cardinals might be thrown in there too. I don't know about that, but I mean... this whole, they're a major league team, you got to play good. You know, everyone's a major leaguer out there. It's like, come on, man. Like, they gotta clean it up. I mean, their starting pitching has not been good. Like, period. Second worst rotation in the majors. Like, that's where they're at right now.
Yeah, if I could go back to the weekend and instead of talking about the future, I think what happens with Trevor Williams is going to be a storyline going forward. I mean, Ross didn't come out and say, I think Ross kind of backed him on Sunday, essentially saying, he'll make his next start. But I mean, when you're already talking about whether a guy's making his next start or not, is Keegan Thompson going to start getting those starts? Is someone else going to earn a start in the rotation? I think is a conversation we're probably going to be having, unless Trevor Williams gets back to looking like he did the that second and third start, maybe more than what's been pretty rough lately. I mean, it seems like he's not fooling anyone.
No, it's the, I remember. Early in the year, when he's having those very nice starts and he's got that nice four-pitch mix, I was looking at some of his pitch charts, and one of the ones that StatCast does, they're color-coding the pitches, and where he was working each of his pitches in the zones, it looked like this beautiful rainbow because he was locating every type exactly where you'd want it to be. And certainly the last three starts, he's not throwing a bunch of dick balls out there. It isn't that. It's just that he's clearly not locating where his stuff works off of itself, And the charts just haven't been pretty. He's averaging under three innings per outing the last three starts. And I think you're right. I saw a quote from David Ross who was asked about Justin Steele and Keegan Thompson specifically, like, oh, might, you know, they came up as starters, might they get a chance in the rotation? And he kind of deferred by focusing on how well they're doing as relievers and just want to keep riding them like that, fine. But even if you were to exclude them as possibilities, and even if you were to say, ah, well, Alec Mills is hurt now and we kind of like him in that swing role, the reality of what Trevor Williams is to this team is that, yes, he was brought in to have a dedicated rotation spot out of the gate because the Cubs wanted to see what they could do because he's had success in the past. He's only 29, great individual pitches. That's a guy in this mode that the Cubs are in. You bring in and you see what he can do. But it's not as if he's the only starting pitcher available to them right now that you might also want to fit into that same mold. Now, I know that, like, when Shelby Miller was up, I understand the wildness, particularly in the first outing, was like of the kind where you think, oh, something is just like deeply wrong. But if I could be a bit of a homer, he improved the next like three times out. It was still quite bad, don't get me wrong, but it improved. And then he had the lower back injury, and now he's made two very interesting starts there at Iowa, and he's a guy who's going to have to be activated at some point. He happened to start the same day as Trevor Williams, just saying, he's on the same schedule. There are guys that you're going to want to maybe take a look at in the same way that you wanted to take a look at Trevor Williams. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that we are coming to a point where the Cubs might have to make a decision like, okay, let's see what happens if we do this. Because it isn't just about trying to stay competitive through the year. It's, okay, we want to know what pieces we have for the future. And so I'm glad you brought that up because I had sort of forgotten that that was a very telling pull, I thought, after just two innings of, and they were poor, but maybe he could have straightened it out. You never know. But David Ross basically said she didn't feel like the hitters were fooled by anything and that it wasn't going to get better. But, oh, that same game. So here's, this was the plug I tried to give you guys, but no, you didn't jump on it. At The Athletic right now, you know, subscribe to that the wonderful website that these two guys write at. They put together a fantastic piece on Matt Duffy, who thrice gave the Cubs the lead on Saturday. I had already written up, like, my post-gamer, and it was with Duffy driving in the winning run in the 10th there. Because, of course, Craig Kimbrell coming in, that game's over. Stupid ground ball through the shift and another stupid ground ball up the middle. Nothing, you know, whatever. Ruined that. But he did thrice give the Cubs the lead and, you know, obviously putting together a fantastic season. And I thought that the anecdote that you guys got from his agent, that there were teams that were already looking to bring him into the front office of the coaching staff after last year, was really interesting, particularly given he didn't show up in the big leagues last year. And so I think it would have been fair for teams to be like, oh, is he maybe, you know, about hitting that point? So I thought that was also the Alzolay story was really good too.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that type of stuff where I find it interesting when a guy can come into a clubhouse and already have like suddenly have that impact. It's been what, you know, 3 months that he's been with this group and he's able to have that type of impact on a youngster. I thought that part was cool too, the Alzolay stuff, how Alzolay reacted to it and brought it up out of nowhere was interesting. And just, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised because years ago I talked to like I was doing national work for Baseball Prospectus and I remember talking to this Giants team and talking to like Hunter Pence and Buster Posey in that clubhouse and they all brought up Duffy, who was a rookie that year. It was 2016 and they'd, you know, they'd had a solid, was that the year? Wait, so 15 they won the,
he came up briefly in 15 and then he was his rookie year.
Yeah.
Or, I mean 14. And then his rookie year was 15.
Okay, so I talked to them in 15 is when I talked to them because it was a year after. I was going to say, it was like, wasn't it even year magic? Okay, yeah, I was getting my years mixed up. Anyways, they all brought up Duffy about someone who's a young guy and came up immediately and started producing because that's what expectations are and fit in right away with the clubhouse and understood what it meant to be in a winning culture and all those things, you know, all those buzzy things that you don't really know how to measure. You don't really know what they mean until, you know, you hear baseball players talk about it all the time, and then you start to believe that it's actually a real thing. Well, it seems like Duffy has those intangibles that the Cubs have been searching for that too, right? It's not just his contact ability, what he does on the field. It's also the stuff off the field. It's a good story in the sense that I don't think he was on any of our radars in spring training, really. And he barely was on anyone's radar the first 2-3 weeks of the season, right? So it's a very out of nowhere situation. We'll see how long it lasts. I don't know how long he's hitting the ball well. He's putting the ball in play. Even when he's making outs, he's putting the ball in play. And for me, I'm sure I've ranted about this plenty, but I'm just growing really tired of the lack of contact in baseball and strikeouts and walks and homers being the only thing we watch. And I try not to be like, oh, the game's changed and it's not as fun as it used to be. I enjoy baseball still. It's just watching him consistently put the bat on the ball. Yeah, it leads to some unfortunate double plays, but for the most part, it's obviously been a huge boost to this team, and it's completely turned this offense around. I don't know. It's not just him, but it's just like it coincided with him being inserted into the lineup, and it's a very different offense to watch now after 3 weeks of just dreadful baseball.
Here's an anecdote that wound up on the cutting room floor of our story. Duffy's agent, Paul Cohen, I was asking, you know, how long he had advised him, and they went back to Long Beach State. And I was kind of curious because that's a big time program, and Paul has also represented Evan Longoria and Troy Tulowitzki. And, you know, if you're at Long Beach State and I'm playing the left side of the infield, and you usually go higher than 18th round. And I was just kind of curious. And the story I was told is that his junior year, he was banged up, and, you know, he could have rested for, say, a month and gotten healthy and put up, you know, far better numbers. But he said, no, my team needs me. I got to keep playing through it. And he was kind of struggling to the point where Matt's dad turned to Paul and said something like, you know, should I really appreciate these last few weeks? Like, is this the end of Matt's career? And Cohen kind of laughed and said, he's like, I've been doing this a long time. He'll get drafted. Don't worry about it. It won't be as high as we thought, say, going into his junior year. But I think the takeaway was that's his kind of team approach. When it was like, you know, a really critical juncture at his career, he just decided to keep playing through it no matter what it would do to his draft stock. And obviously he wound up in a great place. You know, the Giants had there was a relationship there. They took a flyer. He got to the big leagues within like a little over 2 years and on a team that won the World Series. And I think the impression he made, you can just look at the comments to our story. There were lots of Giants fans who were just, you know, randomly typing out, you know, like, I love that guy. What happened to him? I have a Duffy jersey in my closet, stuff like that. And I was like, he played for the Giants for, you know, really a handful of months. But it is impressive to see the reaction of someone like Alzolay. And there are times where it feels like the whole leadership angle is extremely forced, especially in like spring training when people just keep asking about it. But it's not about telling us you're a leader. It's showing it. And there's a great job there of getting that scene on camera where you could literally see him in the dugout kind of like motioning Alzolay over to go talk in the tunnel. And, you know, the Cubs were legitimately disappointed when they didn't sign him. I mean, granted, they didn't try hard enough to give him a major league deal. Like, that certainly would have been a tipping point. But they wanted him, like, from the top down. They repeatedly were on him. And finally, this offseason, they were able to make a deal.
And he's going to be quite a trade chip in July, am I right? No, I'm just kidding. He is.
I was thinking Trevor Williams might make up like a phantom injury, and then all of a sudden, after they trade like 40% of their rotation, they give him say 10 starts because he's still arbitration eligible next year.
I mean, it is fine.
I heard it here first.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a legit good point because, like, you know, if you could maintain a controllable guy for one more year in the rotation, if you had reclaimed him this year, that was part of what I liked about his signing in particular, and obviously it hasn't gone now, but yeah, Duffy, unfortunately, for Cubs fans who are falling in love, he qualifies for just full-on free agency after this year. So if they want to keep him around, it'd be, man, that's a whole side conversation for later.
It'd be a good fit for the Giants again.
Well, I mean, now if he has a year like this, and particularly knowing all that ancillary stuff, I mean, there's 16 teams that should want him. He's going to get paid. 100 mil, Matt Duffy. All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Now we can talk about the National Series with John Lester coming back to town, having signed with the Nationals on the one-year deal. Timing just wasn't right for the Cubs, or so the story goes. Kyle Schwarber also returning to Wrigley Field. Similarly, you know, I don't know. I don't mean to cast aspersions because, like, I don't think you have to buy management's party line all the time, you know, unqualified. But I do look back and try to observe these things objectively. And when the tender deadline came around with Kyle Schwarber, I was surprised at a non-tender, more so because the trade market was zero than the actual fact of the non-tender. And then when he ultimately did sign with the Nationals, although most people commented, oh, see, he got more than he would have gotten in arbitration. The Cubs clearly made a mistake and they were just throwing him away to save money. Well, for one thing, there's a huge portion of that signing is deferred, as the Nationals do. And furthermore, you know, arbitration projections aren't the same thing as the actual numbers guys get in arbitration. And that was particularly going to be a wonky one coming off this past year. And so, I don't know. I can understand how that played out. And the Cubs felt that they upgraded in style in Jock Peterson in left field. And then with John Lester, similarly, when he was ready to go, when the Nationals were pushing and ready to sign, the Cubs just felt like they didn't have the cash flow available to commit at that time. And so they couldn't do it. So they say, because then they later ended up signing Jake Arrieta for more. So I don't know. I hope that that isn't what the conversation is this week. I guess that's why I lead off with it, because I'm trying to punt it to the side so that it can just be, there's fans in the stands. John Lester's going to walk out to that mound. He's going to get an amazing ovation. There's going to be a beautiful prepackaged video. As soon as Kyle Schwarber takes left field, he's going to get all that love. Kind of wish they weren't doing it at the same time, because I wish they had each, you know, their moment. But yeah, I mean, I'm not like actually weeping at this, but I am a little emotional thinking about those guys coming back and what they've meant to the organization. And I'm excited for this series and for tonight in particular.
Yeah, you know, as someone that's not a fan, I'm curious to see, like, it's undeniable the impact Lester had, right? Lester changed everything about this organization, right? He there was a narrative around the group that he helped push into a different area where they're a winning club with expectations on them every year now, right? That this is not that was not the case before John Lester arrived. He was a big part of that. Schwarber, for me, I do wonder. I would think that there's mixed feelings by fans. Fans probably look at his numbers and say, like, oh, they made the right decision. The same old Schwarber. And you know, he's always been one of those players for me personally that's been like, oh, it's on the verge of being a really good player, and then something pops up that keeps him from really delivering and being as good as he was. I still think those last 2-3 months of 2019, like, that was just like a taste of what he could be, and we just can't get that consistency. So I do think, like, the little difference there, it feels different to me as far as Lester and Schwarber, but obviously there are fans that have a, you know, place in their heart for Schwarber, but Lester is just a complete on a different level as far as the way I look at it and the impact that he had on the organization and the type of reception. They both should get great receptions, but Lester is just like, I mean, he changed everything.
I need to give two shout-outs. One to our colleague Maria Torres, who asked Lester on the Zoom on Saturday, like, what was your welcome to the Cubs moment? And he referenced the 2015 Cubs convention, describing it as a whole nother bag of Cracker Jacks, and that people talk about what you did before COVID, and his head, like, exploded thinking about that room. So I obviously turned on the Google machine and found Bleacher Nation's wrap-ups from all those days. And it's just amazing to think of, like, all the topics covered during then, like MLB's air quotes tampering investigation into the Joe Maddon hire, Theo being asked if Chris Bryant would be ready for opening day, LOL. you know, Jed and Theo talking about going to Publix and getting wine before meeting Maddon at the RV park. And then the big reveal about how the bleachers wouldn't be ready for opening day, which then reminded me how, like, so many of the bathrooms wouldn't work on opening day. And that was just, like, such a cubby occurrence. And that, yeah, I mean, you can't write the history of the Cubs without those two guys. And I know Kyle Schwarber wasn't the, like, Dustin Pedroia, like, monster offensive presence that they hoped for. But, like, when they drafted this guy, I mean, everyone thought it was a reach, and he absolutely delivered in, like, the biggest sporting event of baseball of anyone's lifetime in that clubhouse. I mean, in terms of the possible outcomes for the number 4 pick in the 2014 draft, I mean, and all the unforgettable moments he created for the Cubs, I mean, they got to be at, like, you know, the 98th percentile of what they could have possibly hoped for, if not higher.
Oh my gosh, that was a really fun stroll down memory lane there, Mooney, because I, you know, you immediately put yourself back where you were for all of those.
I mean, you were hungover during that convention every day, I think.
Well,
and the Wi-Fi was bad, but other than that, yeah, it was good recap. It was very helpful.
Yeah, it would have been that Friday, you know, where Lester would have been referring to the pact, to the opening ceremonies, where you're shoulder to shoulder and you just can't even, because that year in particular, people were, I mean, that was as hyped as it gets, right? Because it was Lester's arrival, or Lester, yeah, and Joe Maddon.
And Maddon's arrival, yeah.
And I think people started to sense that things were turning. And then certainly, yeah, then the Saturday is always a rougher go. I missed the convention this year. Can't wait for that next year. People, you know, it's not for everybody, but I do love being packed in there with, what did he say, a bunch of Cracker Jacks. Yeah, you can count me among them.
Lester was a noticeable absence for, like, the last 3 Cubs conventions too. Like, he did. I don't know if he even did after. There was always suddenly a celebrity golf event in Orlando.
He had a scheduled event. Yes. When the World Series and the biggest and best free agent deal in Chicago Cubs history, your schedule for January, it fills up, and you're like, oh, I don't think I can make it that year.
It's the coldest weekend of the winter. There's, like, NFL playoffs going on. You have to go to spring training in, like, 2 weeks anyway. Like, how about you just come to Chicago and stay in a ice-covered hotel.
How is it always snowing? Like, it's always one of the biggest snow weekends. Yeah, it's so
it's
ridiculous.
Like the worst. Yes. Oh, and I love it. God. So now I'm getting nostalgic about that too. I want to note too, it's funny, you know, I hadn't thought about, other than the fact that they both joined the Nationals, I hadn't thought about in the way that you guys are talking about these, the nature of Schwarber and Lester both being emblematic of a lot of things about this period of the Cubs, because they did arrive in the same year. Lester, of course, at the end of the year in December, and Schwarber was drafted that summer. So actually Schwarber, strictly speaking, longer with the Cubs organization than Lester, which feels kind of weird when you think about it. But yeah, it's like Schwarber sort of embodied that, what the Cubs draft spirit was from that period, and came up and contributed so significantly to the success, including his miraculous comeback from the knee injury. And then John Lester was on both, you know, both a literal sense, he's a pitcher, not a hitter, but also he was the big money free agent signing who came in and immediately contributed. And I mean, I think there's a lot of ways you could point to the two of them as being more than their individual contributions for this period of the Cubs. And so, yeah, it'll be great to see them back. I'm glad there will be fans there to be able to give them that moment. Obviously I hope the Cubs pummel John Lester, and I think that would be fun. I saw a line that he's pretty excited to face Anthony Rizzo. That's the one. I wonder, maybe if things go really sideways, we'll get Rizzo pitching to Lester at some point late in the game. That would be a fun matchup.
that would be a classic ending to this. Yeah, I would like to see that.
So he Cubs and Nats. It'll be a four gamer. Starlin Castro also back. Although, and he's been back, right? Like,
yeah, they played his walk. They played his walk up music, or Rizzo used his walk up music once before. They did a nice little some gestures. Right. And I think his Cubs time, and listening to Cubs people talk about, I think there's been a growing appreciation over the years for what he was able to do at such a young age. And Anthony Rizzo mentioning this idea of, you know, wanting to play 162 games every single season. That was an Alfonso Soriano, Starlin Castro kind of mindset that Rizzo, unprompted, has mentioned, I'd say, more than once over the recent years.
Yeah, I had forgotten they had the tickle fight. That was Bryant and Castro.
Don't remember exactly what you're talking about, like vaguely.
I remember, but, yeah, that was,
you know,
great.
They got, it was like a, it was Victor Caratini got trucked by, might have been Derek Dietrich, former Cubs legend, Derek Dietrich. And when they came out to sort of like jaw off to the side, you had Castro and Bryant. And Bryant just gives him a little poke right under the ribs. And just, they're laughing off to the side. Oh, it's great. It's delightful. By the way, Castro, he only just turned 31 this year. I mean, jeez. He's 1 year older than like Matt Duffy, for context. And just, he's been around forever. Came up at 20. Nice little reunion. And Alex Avila also coming back, which, you know. Some Cubs fans have some fond memories there. And Josh Harrison, former Cubs prospect. You know, you don't get that love for Harrison, but he is, strictly speaking, former Cub. I like to point that out. So, good series for a gamer. I think we've got a Max Scherzer-Jake Arrieta matchup later in this series, which maybe not what it would have been 5 years ago, but still a pretty fun matchup. And we will be back at you, I guess, at the end of that series on Thursday this week. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic. And sincerely, go subscribe if you haven't already and read that Duffy piece. It's great. It just provides you so much more context for how a guy like that can be important in more ways than you see in the line score. So appreciate that piece, gents. So thank you all for listening. Rate, review, subscribe. Get us wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at you soon. Thanks so much. Take care.